Yay.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Republic Education Call for the United States of America in our Republican form of self-governance for February 20th, 2024 at 9 p.m. Eastern. I am Phyllis Marie, and I will start this evening with a reading of Colossians 3, verse 15, and Colossians 1, verse 27. Learn to live from your true center in me. I reside in the deepest of your being, in eternal union with Spirit. It is at this level that my peace reigns continually. You will not find lasting peace in the world around you, instances, or in human relationships. The external world is always in flux, under the curse of death and decay, but there is a gold mine of peace deep within you, waiting to be tapped. Take time to delve into the riches residing presence. I want you to live increasingly from your real center, where we love, where my love has an eternal grip on you. I am Christ in you, the hope of glory. We, the people of the Republic, are full, lawful, and private. And our declarations, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the cause and compel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are creable, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And before I turn this over to our speaker, to Daryl, I want to mention that if you read the notice for this evening, we have a suggestion that we would like to consider moving our 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. And have any particular objections to that, please let us know. We'd like to do that in the next, within the next week or so. We haven't checked with the that we normally have on Thursday night yet, but some of you may have heard me asking Paul if that would cause him a problem, because he's doing technical work with the Radio Ranch. And we also would like to encourage each and every one of you to get on the Radio Ranch that is aired Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We're pretty much partnering with this group because they have a lot of wonderful information there, and I can guarantee you will learn something new every day that you get on that call. So with that, Daryl, I'm going to turn it over to you first.
Okay, well, thank you, Phyllis, and welcome, everyone. That call during the week, it's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time, so that's the Eastern time zone. So figuring out whichever time zone that you fall in. But tonight we're going to kind of go over the importance of establishing your national status and make that a part of a record with the highest office in this here matrix that basically establishes status and is authorized to issue passports. And this this affidavit of national status, and I don't know how many people, maybe we could take a roll of how many people actually went ahead and sent in this affidavit of citizenship evidence to make your status a matter of record with the Secretary of, with the Federal Secretary of State in Washington, D.C., and with Anthony Blinken and the signs, and to get your status, your political status established into that record, that when they look up that name, that you are recognized not under the guise of that 14th Amendment involuntary servitude status with civil rights, but you are basically recognized as one of the people of the United States of America, basically with a national status, with God-given inherent rights protected by the Constitution. And this is very important, and this is where they have basically changed the system, like in the 1860 era during the Civil War, where they added a dual citizenship, where we have actually two statuses. But the other one is really a commercial vessel for most people, maybe already know that. But if you don't, we're going to kind of go over some things that will help you further understand this, that we live in a constitutional republic and not a democracy. Democracy is nothing more than mob rule. It's, you know, 51%. I mean, just anything over half is majority rules, and that's mob rule. It's not, and where the Constitution basically establishes a limited form of authority that goes out to those that are put in places of authority and in a public office. And I'd like to read here the definition of a sovereign. And I know they like to identify people as sovereign citizens, you know, when you stand up and say that, you know, I'm not a citizen of the United States. Oh, you're one of those sovereign citizens, which citizenship, basically a citizen of the United States, is basically allegiance, to another, to a state or the United States. And what they try to describe in the 14th Amendment is that all persons born or naturalized are citizens of the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So this is kind of broke down, and there's a real distinction kind of broke down in that 71 pages, that National Citizenship Handbook, that is attached below, and we'll go through that a little bit tonight. But the definition of sovereign from Black's Law 6th edition.
One states, moment.
Yes.
One moment, Daryl. If I could clarify something.
Yeah, go ahead.
The way you explained that, the 14th Amendment states, all persons born or naturalized and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. It says and, you said are. So all persons born or naturalized and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, there's the jurisdictional statement.
So. Yeah, and that word and is very important.
Oh, yes.
This is key, because you have to meet both parts. Not just, you know, born or naturalized, but and subject to the jurisdiction. This is very key, and that's explained in further detail in that 71-page National Citizenship Handbook. But I'm going to go ahead and read here the definition of sovereign from Black's Law 6. It says, a person, body, or state in which independent and supreme authority is vested, a chief ruler with supreme power, a king or other ruler within a monarchy. Okay? But, you know, we are all under the authority of our Creator. We are all kings and queens. And this is on the land, you know, which we are sojourners under the authority of our Creator. And under that, we are subject to a higher law, And we have, just like we have inherent rights also come with inherent duties. And these duties, God commanded us to take dominion and basically to implement his principles. God says, if you love me, you will keep my commands. And the two greater laws that fulfilled the Ten Commands of the Old Testament, which is to love your neighbor as yourself and love God above all things. So, and that is the fulfillment of the law, because love does no harm. So this is where we really need to go back to in our objective of self-governance, is that we look out for one another, we help one another, and we live at peace with one another. As you know, we're not to try to, you know, harm our neighbor or anything else. So with this, we'll get into a little bit on the Okay, the state constitutions, to show where political power resides. Now, this document is attached down below, and it's 12 pages, but it goes through all 50 of the states, and it kind of goes into their constitution in the different articles, where we'll go through a few of them here, and basically, and then we can talk about it a little bit. But in Alabama, Article 1, Section 2, the power source, the people source of power, it states that all political power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their benefit, and that, therefore, they have at all times an inalienable and indefeasible right to change their form of government in such manner as they deem expedient. Now, you can't get it, you can't mince that up. I mean, it goes back to the political, all political power is inherent in the people. So the people are the source of the power that is basically delegated to basically representatives to work as servants for the people. And in the next one, in Alaska, there's an Article 1, Section 2. The source of government says all political power is inherent in the people. All governments originates with the people, is founded upon their will only, and is instituted solely for the good of the people as a whole. Now, this directs the authority really to the people, that the people are in charge of, you know, the operations of the government. But when a government gets destructive to its means, it is the right of the people to basically dissolve that body of government and change it, you know, back to the people. And this is what we've got going on today. We've got a foreign government that's operating as a for-profit corporation and has found its way into power, and they've controlled the money, the courts, the politics, the media. They have basically taken it away through operating outside of the authority of the Constitution, because the Constitution says very clearly in the enumerated rights, that is in Article 1, Section 8, Clause, or Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, Part 1, or Clause 1, or Section 10, Clause 1, where it says that no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin lawful tender for payment of debts. And that they cannot impair the obligations of contracts, as a contract is superior, and that is an agreement between two or more people. And, you know, this is where if this here, basically the limitations of the Constitution were honored, if we were actually operating within the constraints that is in the Constitution, we wouldn't have this abuse of power that we have today. But they are operating under basically a colorable law, which is not even law, but it's a color of authority. And it is not granted by their oath of office. And that oath of office is basically a quasi or a I lost the word. But anyway, it is a quid pro quo contract. You know, that it applies that they take that office only under the duty that they have to operate within the authority that is granted to them as delegated powers from the sovereign, from the people, as the people are the political power. And here in Arizona, it says all political power is inherent in the people. And the governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed and are established to protect and maintain individual rights. Now see how that, you know, really lays out the authority of a state. And then we'll go into a little bit on state citizen and the difference between a state citizen and a citizen of the United States. And there's a very clear distinction. And I was going to, there's a couple here that I thought I'd point out. I think one was on page 9 here. The Carolinas. There's Minnesota. If the government is instituted for the security, benefit, and protection of the people, in whom all political power is inherent, together with the right to alter, modify, or reform government whenever required by the public good. Now, do we see a need to modify and reform it? You better believe it. There's more evidence than is needed, but it is definitely there. Let's see, North Carolina. And here in North Carolina, it talks about the sovereignty of the people. All political power is vested and derived from the people. All governments of right originates. See, of right. That's sui juris, where it is the people have the authority by right, and de facto is by force or power. But here, all political power is vested in and derived from the people. All governments of right originates from the people, is founded upon their will only, and is instituted solely for the good of the whole. And South Carolina is very, very similar, but it defines it in a little bit different way, but yet very much, you know, in the same message, the political power in the people. All political power is vested in and derived from the people only. Therefore, they have the right at all times to modify their form of government. But in South Dakota, and this is where I originated from, as I was born on the land in South Dakota, says all political power is inherent in the people. All free government is founded on their authority and is instituted for their equal protection and benefit. And they have the right in lawful and constituted methods to alter or reform their forms of government in such manner as they may think proper. And the state of South Dakota is an inseparable part of the American Union, and the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. So in these here parts of each one of the states that are part of this union of the United States of America, lay out very clearly where the authority lies. The authority lies with the people. And that's basically what the Ninth and Tenth Amendment also really support, and basically that's the message, which is one of the first 10 amendments which were brought in with that Constitution of the United States. And I'll just I'll read the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. The Ninth Amendment says, the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the Tenth Amendment, it says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectfully, or to the people. Now, you can't get it very much clearer than that, where this authority was retained by the people. And the only authority that these public servants have is by the consent of the people through delegated powers. And the powers that are delegated to a government agent cannot be redelegated to somebody else by that government agent. It stays where it's first delegated. And those are the ones that have the duty to basically speak for the people. And what we have let happen here in this country after World War II, they brought in this here United Nations, or established this United Nations, and, you know, kind of turned over every office over to the United Nations, and this is what has to be taken back, because it's been handed over to foreign interests through different secret societies, and this is where now the people in their capacity, in their sovereign capacity, as one of the people of this country, we need to take it back and restore and reestablish the intent of those four organic documents, which is the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Ordinance, and the Constitution for the United States of America. And in substance, the Constitution for the United States of America is basically the same substance as the Constitution of the United States. What they did is they changed the title to, they took off "of America" and they made it the Constitution of the United States. And then when that was brought in, the first thing that they did was they established federal districts, which basically set it up basically in the capacity of a corporation. And this is, you know, where they basically set up a top-down system. And what we're trying to restore is restore the authority and the power back to the hands of the people. And that is where a trial by jury, you know, any controversy, and this is basically in the Seventh Amendment, where it talks about, in suits at common law where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. Shall be. That's direct. And no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States, other than according to the rules of common law. But if there was a trial by jury, but see what Lincoln did in 1863, he basically brought in Executive Order 100 and Lever Code 13, and putting the legislative law above common law. And this really took away, you know, that authority from the people and put us under basically martial law or court martial at that time. And and give the power over, you know, to the legislature. And that makes it like a top, that here we go again, top down. See, where does Congress have the authority to operate outside of that 10-mile square? In Article 1, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, this is where the limitations, and this is what we've talked about for some time about the 1817 statement, but it talks about where Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square. And then they also to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. And so that puts a limitation upon Congress. But then in Clause 18, this is kind of what they use to go into overreach, where it says to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying out into execution the foregoing powers, and all powers vested in this Constitution in the government of the United States or any department or officer thereof. And this is where they brought us under into war power. And basically they've declared war against the people. And this was done in 1863, you know, putting the legislative above the common law. And then the next thing they did is they set up the central bank in 1913, basically turning the treasury over to a private corporation called the Federal Reserve System. And that's a whole nother issue on the money that is distributed, the paper money. When you look at the bills, when you look at the seal, one will say Federal Reserve Bank, and then it will give a state, you know, Dallas, Texas, or whatever, or Minneapolis. And the other one will say United States, and it will say all the larger bills from five on up, it will say Federal Reserve System. And what is interesting about that is in this writing on It's All About Trust, it talked about this one guy. He was setting up a reserve bank and was audited, and $1 or a $100 bill represents 1/100th of $1, and a $50 bill represents 1/50th of $1, and a 20/120th, a 10/110th, and a 5/150th. But they had to have that many $1 bills in the reserve, you know, to constitute it according, you know, to their rules or requirements as a reserve bank. So this is where the fraction reserve, which is what the Federal Reserve was allowed to do back in 1913, where they could lend out nine times more than they had on deposit. And this is what caused the banking collapse when they removed the – they were lending out money that they didn't have to back it up. And then they – it was basically a manufactured crisis. But a country can never go bankrupt or can never go broke if it uses its own money. But when you're using this fiat – it gets expanded to oblivion. And this expansion happened greatly in the 1930s, and it caused a lot of hardship. A lot of people were driven off their land. And then they brought in the Buck Act, which set up the zip coding, where they set up all these federal zip coding districts throughout the country through the Buck Act. And then they changed the court system. And basically, you have the District Court of the United States, which was basically the common law side of it, and then they changed it to the United States District Court. You know, so it kind of sounds very similar, just the same as the Supreme Court, the small s Supreme Court. And then they changed it to the United States capital S Supreme, capital C Court, and put it in the District of Columbia. That is the highest court of the legislative branch that is required to operate, that has authority to operate, because that was a set up through the Judiciary Act in 1789, I believe. And this is when they established the United States Supreme Court on the federal side, and then they created all the inferior courts off of that. And that's where all these lower courts, how they're all tied together and they're all still subject to that jurisdiction. You start out with your county court. You can appeal it up to your district court and then up to your state Supreme Court and then over to the federal district court and then to the federal appellate court and then to the United States Supreme Court. But see, that is all on the legislative side. But Article 3 of the Constitution was basically established along with the Constitution in 1787. Now, this is very important where it talks about the superior power. It talks about the small j judicial capital P power. See, this is putting the authority back to the hands of the people, because this, the Constitution was basically created by the people. And it wasn't by the state or by the entity. It comes from the sovereign. All political power is basically inherent in the people. So it was the people that set that up and through delegation. But it says the small j judicial capital P power of the United States shall be vested in one small s supreme capital C court. Now, this is vested means it's fixed. It can't be changed. And then in Section 2, it talks about the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution and to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, counsel, and to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. That is in law. And this is very important part to talk, and I've expressed this a couple of times, but if there's somebody that hasn't heard it before, I'll just go over it just for that purpose. But in the 11th Amendment, it talks about the capital J judicial small p power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the people or one of the United States. Say, you would be actually one of the United States as a national. And this is where it is so important to establish our national status as basically one of the people. And has anybody got any questions at this time? At this point? If you're muted, you got to press star.
This is Phyllis.
Yeah, go ahead, Phyllis.
I think this is a good place, Marilyn, to bring in the comments that she had to everything that you've said already, because people need to understand why it is important that we get our status changed. Marilyn, would you like to say what you told us earlier?
Certainly. I'd like to start out with, 2 weeks ago you listened to George Washington letter. And that letter expressed how the men and women that came over to our country here and how they were battered and bashed by the Britons, and that the queen and the king were the people that were harming and not letting these people live a proper life. They had to fight to get their rights. We're back at that stage again. We're in the same spot today that we were. And what's important is that we work on our status as a national, not only talk it, but think it and act it. It's important. And what we'd like to do is to, with Roger's radio show, we'd like to, it's been suggested that we use them as our education format. They're open every day for 6 days on the radio for education. You can ask any question, but you can get your education there. And we'd like to, through suggestion of many people, work on our status on our Tuesday nights. Do hand-holding and go step by step to help you, because there are three important documents that we really need to change our status. The first one would be the birth certificate, authenticating it. The second one would be the affidavit of national status that would be sent to the Secretary of State. We need to do a name change. And on the national passport, they will recognize us and document us and send us back a new passport with national status. And then we've got the best that we can get. But we also have to recognize that our past behavior has to stop. We don't want to use the zip code anymore. We don't want to make new contracts. We don't want to complain anymore about what's been happening. We want to move forward and break as many contracts, rescind them, revoke them, and not contract again. And you say, well, I don't make any contracts. Well, every time you get a letter or you send a letter, you use the zip code. Every time you get in the car, you show your license, or go to the bank, you show your license. How many times do you show your license?
None.
Great. That's wonderful.
I don't have one.
That's where we'd like to end up. But we need that national passport documentation to be able to show that. Because otherwise, the police, the law enforcement, they don't take lightly to people that drive without a license. And so in that respect, we're also working on a situation where one of the states is being challenged as far as a license is concerned, or a car license, a plate, a tag, that we don't have to use that either. And so once we can get that established in one state, then it works for all the other states, all 49 of the other ones. So just like Daryl was showing you, in each and every one of the states, we the people have the authority. Well, whatever it says in our Constitution, it's also reiterated in the national Constitution for the United States of America. It says the same thing there, and it applies to all 50 states. So we need to start using heirloom seeds. We need to trade, barter, use cash, go to the farm for our eggs, our chickens, our cream, our milk, instead of participating in all the GMO, all the irradiated food, all the glyphosate laden foods, Roundup. You see how many different ways we have to change not only our thought process but our actions. And so we'd like to use Tuesday night as our step-by-step working time, and use Rogers Ranch Radio, which is in your, all the information is in your notice tonight, how to get on, what time it is, so that we can be educated as a group. And then we'll be pulling other groups in and directing them to the education with Roger, and we'll see what we can do to help everybody get their national status. And I yield.
Yes. It's
Sal from Colorado.
Let me make a little statement first, Sal.
Go ahead.
Please. Yeah, the one thing is what we are doing, we are correcting the record with our proper status, you know, because what they've did is they've held us under the presumption of this second inferior personage status that they created in 1868 with the 14th Amendment. And what we are doing is we are correcting our rightful national status or our state citizen status, which is whichever state we were born in. And them statuses, we're going to go through a little bit, if we got time, where it explains that, like with through the slaughterhouse case and stuff, and where there's a clear distinction between, you know, the state and federal citizenship and how it's recognized. Okay, go ahead, Sal.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I sent out my letter on the 7th of this month. It still hasn't been received at the Secretary of State. It was received in the post office, I guess, for the Secretary of State, and that was on the 15th. That's 5 days ago.
Wow.
Okay, I sent mine off on January 22nd, and it was received on February 1st. So it took, you know, approximately 10 days.
Yeah.
So.
That was it. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see if they... I didn't ask for them to do a file stamp and send anything back, but I got it off kind of right away after we did those calls. But you got anything else, Sal?
No, I did send two copies so that they would send one back to me, put
okay.
in a self-addressed stamp envelope, all that stuff. And they sent it registered mail.
Okay, there's several people that have requested a file stamp copy back, so we'll see what they what kind of results we get on that.
Yeah.
If anybody gets any file stamp copies back, if you could kind of share that with us, we'd appreciate that.
Shall do.
Okay, is there anybody else got a question?
This is Phyllis. I sent mine off on February 1st, and they received it on the 7th, but I'm kind of like Sal. I have not gotten the file stamped copy back yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, they might have received the envelope, but it might take them a week or two to go through them, too. You know, it depends
right.
how many they get. You know, if they got a million or two, it might take them some time. So I guess hopefully we can get
that
hopefully
message.
We can get 20, 30 million people sending these in and start letting them know that, you know, that we're taking the country back and there's no getting around it, because the people are the authority. And when they recognize it in their record, you know, there's nothing that they could do, because they only are sitting there with delegated powers as the true power and authority comes from the people. That has been delegated to them only, and they've usurped that power and are using it, you know, for nefarious purposes. So, is anybody else with a question?
Yeah, Darryl, this is Kent. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Kent.
I'd like you to comment a little further, if you would, thinking about some of the things that Roger's talking about on his show. He made a statement that we must understand that this is all under Babylonian law merchant and not admiralty and maritime, as most people commonly claim or think that are in this quote-unquote movement. So could you comment a little on that? And also, if we could talk a little further about, we know Roger, in fact, he said today that good luck proving their fraudulent activity in their courts. So we know that there's some things that he doesn't want to pursue, and that's fine. But when we had a discussion the other night, you and I talked about the non-pro-tunk position and the ab initio position. I'd like to hear a little more on that, along with the different terms that are used, such as foreign national, non-citizen national, American national, and state citizen, as this issue has also come up on the union call. So if we could talk about those things a little bit, I think it would be beneficial to people so that there isn't conflicts between what they're hearing in one place versus the other, or at least some of this could be cleared up.
Okay, well, I'll try to do my best, but yeah, we're really not operating, even though it is there, as a constitutional republic. We're really operating, you know, and how many times have you heard it? You know, they're trying to destroy our democracy. Well, democracy is, here we go again, it's mob rule. But what they brought us into is really the feudal system, which is basically, you know, operating under color of law as mob rule, and which is basically democracy. But I'm looking up the word feudal system.
Mm-hmm.
And in Black's Law 6, it talks about pertaining to feuds or fees relating to or growing out of the feudal system or feudal law, having the quality of a feud and distinguished from allodial. And allodial is like absolute, like ownership or control of. And feudalism is, you know, where, I don't know, you're like asking permission, kind of like, or you've given somebody authority over your territory or that you're living in. And then I'll go into feudal courts here a little bit, and it talks about in the 12th century, the Lord, quote, Lord had the right to hold a court for his tenants. And you know how in a lot of these mortgages, they identify you as a tenant. And this is where, I'll go into the FHA, which is the Farmer Home Administration, and they give this for, like, beginning farmers and, you know, people that are new homeowners, you know, that are trying to make a trying to purchase their first home, and they don't have any credit, very good credit. But if you qualify under certain circumstances, then, you know, you can get a mortgage. And I challenged that mortgage contract back in the 90s, and it said that you assigned this property, which includes refrigerator, freezer, carpet, utensils, all this stuff, and then which is the property, and also includes, and then you go on to the next page, and it gives a description of the land and property that is under this mortgage contract, and it says, which you assign this property unto the government to have and to hold forever in fee simple. And then it's basically holding you, you're giving it all to the government, and they're putting you in as a tenant, even though you're purchasing it. But this is basically the way a feudal system operates. You know, they'll give you basically permission to go ahead and have the impression of ownership, but, you know, then you better pay taxes on it every year. And if you have to pay taxes on it, you do not own it. Somebody else owns it, and you are just a tenant. And then if they go and come against you, I mean, you have to pay taxes and actually have an insurance policy on it too. Because it's, and that is mandated through this here feudal system. And But the feudal principle would have led, you know, to a series of courts, one above another. And the dominions of the large landowners are usually scattered so that the great feudal courts became impossible. The growth in the jurisdiction of the king's court removed the necessity for feudal courts. See, who's the king? Who's the queen? And this is where it talked about it in the state constitutions. It goes back to the people in their sovereign capacity. Under the authority of their creator are the kings and queens on the land. And that's where you can have a allodial title, where you have basically absolute control over it, and nobody has authority to come onto your property that that you have a claim to. And that would stay, you know, usually within and passed down through the family. And this is what they're trying to do, is destroy the family unit, which is basically the strength of our country. If we had strong family units and they were, you know, instructed like it was prior to 1960, you know, where basically the alphabet was taught with Bible verses. You know, each letter in the alphabet, you know, was started with a Bible verse, you know, for the children to memorize. To memorize the alphabet, you also memorize, you know, scripture, you know, while you're doing this here process to basically get this thought process that, you know, we are under the authority of our creator, and the created can never be greater than the creator. And just like God created the people, but the people created government for the purpose as a public servant for the people, for the good of the people. And that's why in each one of those parts of the state constitution, it always stated, you know, for the good of all, for the good of the whole, for the people of a whole. See, so this is the purpose of government, not to be the master over the people, but to be there that we can work together and to protect our borders and protect our ground as a unit, as a body of American people. You know, for the good of all, and not for the good of a few. But, you know, we get into, you know, where it's got, I don't know, what is it, 1 or 2% of the people in the whole world control, what, 98% of the wealth or something like that. It's just an extreme number. And, but the biggest share of it's all fiat. It is just digits on a piece of paper. It does not actually identify intrinsic value. It is basically just numbers on a piece of paper that has been backed by other paper securities, but has no substance in value. So I guess feudalism, it talks about, it defines it as the feudal system, the aggregated of feudal principles and usages, the social, political, economic system that dominated the major European nations between the 9th and the 15th centuries. The system was based upon the servile relationship between the vassal and a lord. The vassal paid homage and service to the lord, and the lord provided land and protection to the vassal. And this is where the lord of the manor is like the head of this corporation, just even income tax, where you pay basically into the IMF, which basically funds a lot of, you know, this here corporate agenda. And, I mean, just like here, we've been sending, you know, $100 billion to a foreign country. When we've got homeless on the street here in this country, and people are just barely staying alive. You know, there's a real problem with that. That means we've got people that have been put or found their places in authority that are not really speaking on behalf of the people. And this is where in Hosea, it talks about they appointed themselves kings, and God said, I knew them not. Wow, that's pretty powerful. But, you know, this has happened by the complacency. And I think, you know, the church was always the pillar of the body that, you know, they used to, speak of what is going on in our, you know, daily affairs that need to be corrected or addressed. But the church is now with that 501c3 status, they can't speak out against that harshly, or, you know, they'll be attacked by the corporation through that contract that they have with the corporate system. And so they're muzzled in a way. So let's talk a little bit on feudal law. Is a body of jurisprudence relating to feuds the real property law of the feudal system, the law anciently regulating the property relations of the lord and vassal, the creation, incidence, and transmission of feudal estates, the body of laws and usages constituting the feudal law, was originally customary and unwritten, but a compilation was made in the 12th century called Feudal Constitutions, which has formed the basis of latter digits. The feudal law prevails over Europe through the 12th and 14th centuries and was introduced in England in the Norman Conquest. There, where it formed the entire basis of law of real property until comparatively modern times. Survivals of the feudal law to the present day so affect the color that branch of jurisprudence as to require a certain knowledge of the feudal law in order to better comprehend modern tenures and rules of real property law. Now here you've got statutes and codes that are being imposed as if they are law. And really they're rules basically, you know, that apply to basically these corporate employees and, you know, so-called government agents and agencies. And it doesn't really apply to the national, but what they're doing is holding us under this here status of a United States citizen in voluntary servitude, and holding us in this political capacity, this political status, where they are controlling basically your status as a United States citizen, you know, through their codes, and you are under basically the lord of the manor. And this is where, you know, we have to basically establish our correct national status for the record with the agency that recognizes status and issues the passport. And that's why we encourage you to get this here affidavit sent to the Federal Secretary of State. And it would be a good thing to go to your local county and get it recorded, and then pull a certified copy from that you can make certified copies from to use in other areas. And a certified copy, you know, is, you know, it'll suffice, you know, for the purpose of a entity that might need or want to have an original copy. So it'll be a certified copy of the original. But this is why it's so important, you know, to get this accomplished and get your correct status recognized with the Federal Secretary of State. So, what else did you want me to touch on,
Kim? Yeah, I asked that we touch on the issue of non-pro-tunc and ab initio, and I think I heard Paul on the call, and he's probably been around Roger longer than either you or me, I would presume. And so maybe he has a little more background as to why Roger doesn't really push that issue. And I'm basing this partially, my question, on the conversation that you and I had a few evenings ago.
Okay, yeah. Nunc pro tunc is now for then. And ab initio is basically back to the beginning. So what you're doing is you're doing an affidavit of citizenship evidence. And you're declaring this under the penalties of perjury of the United States of America. And, you know, that you're establishing this here, and an affidavit will stand as truth in commerce of record. So when you establish this affidavit and put this into the record, and if you do it nunc pro tunc ab initio, that's what I did on the form here, and I'll put it up on the screen. It basically takes it, you know, back to the beginning. And if that is unrebutted, the only way an affidavit can be rebutted is basically under the same status, basically under the penalties of perjury. And, you know, if you don't say, you know, how many days they got, usually it's granted 30 days, and if they don't respond in 30 days, it stands as a fact for the record forever. And so, you know, Roger didn't really, I don't know if you give it much thought or not, but he didn't really think that that would hold up. But he said, you know, go ahead, you know, do it that way. If, you know, it don't hurt. But I wanted to put it in there for the purpose of what I did, to take it back to the beginning, because it was non-disclosure that held me in this status that I have not had any knowledge about. I was never told it. My parents were never aware of it. And they were holding us under a false presumption, you know, without, you know, my knowledge. And so I'm making this correction back to the beginning. I'm doing it now for then. Anybody got any questions on that?
Let me ask you.
I have a point. Now for then, okay, that falls under the statement of fact, and an affidavit is a statement of facts. If there is anything that is hearsay or conjecture on an affidavit, it makes it void on its face. In ab initio is the future, and how can you categorically state a fact that is a fact and will always be a fact now and into the future when the future hasn't happened yet? They may try to use that as an argument. But if you want, if it makes you sleep better at night, you can put that in your affidavit, and if it stands 30 days without rebuttal, then you have that you can stand on at that point, because it becomes truth in law. A properly formed affidavit served to the proper individuals, written from the person with firsthand knowledge, stands as truth in fact, unrebutted. So put it in, give it a shot, try it. The only thing they could do is send you an affidavit rebutting it, and then you just file another one. So.
Okay, well, ab initio is not really a future event. Ab initio is basically from the beginning, or from the first act, or from its inception, when it was first applied. So,
I thought that was nunc pro tunc.
No, nunc pro tunc is now.
Okay.
Yeah, nunc pro tunc is doing it now for then. You know, where you should have did it before, but you're doing it now, you know, for basically from the beginning, taking it back to the beginning.
Okay.
So if we all agree with it.
sounds like what you're saying is you're retroactively.
One at a time.
Would Paul agree that ab initio, meaning back to the beginning, is a statement of facts in the affidavit?
As long as it stands unrebutted, yes, it becomes a fact, whether it was a fact or not. If it stands in an affidavit unrebutted, it becomes fact.
The thing is,
you were operating under the presumption that you were a citizen of the United States. You didn't understand that it was the feudal system, but you had been declared an enemy of the state by the government, so the government, under the war powers, never had any obligation to fully disclose anything to you. Why would one battalion of army men give their position and the next four strategic moves they intend to make to the enemy battalion that's just over the hill? Why would they? You don't have to give a enemy advanced notice, ever, okay? You were operating under the War and Emergency Powers Act. You didn't know it, but you still were. And as long as you said you were a citizen, you gladly accepted that role. So you can do it right now, today, now for then, and back to the original for all time. You can do that. And if it stands, it makes the affidavit more powerful. But it just gives them one other thing that they can rebut and throw back at you. Keep the affidavit simple.
Yeah, I wouldn't defer away from the words that are on there very far. You know, so it holds that context, and you don't put something in there for them to challenge in any way. So,
right.
Darryl, I raised the third item, but I think somebody else wanted to comment on this subject first.
Okay, yeah. Who is
Darryl? I'd like to make a point of clarification. Ab initio is a Latin term. Ab means from, and initio means the beginning. So it's literally from the beginning. You're not going back to. You're meaning it's from the beginning, from the time you're referring to. So if it's from your birth, then it's when you started all the way on through to now, and that's ab initio. And, you know, it's not back to the beginning. It's from the beginning. It's a continuum.
Yeah, it's from the inception.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
So you're retroactively requesting this status, basically.
Correct.
Okay. There was another part of what the gentleman had asked. This is Michaela from Florida. And I'm particularly interested in that. It's the different national statuses. Is there any documentation somewhere that we can review?
Yes. Yes. Let me go back here to this. On the attachment, there's a 71-page, it's the National Citizenship Handbook. And in there, it's very clear. I thought we'd try to cover that here. It talks about the difference in the state citizen and United States citizen. And all that, it gets into that and breaks that down, and it explains it very well. So that is in the attachment.
Got it. Thank you.
At the bottom.
Yeah. I've got it. I've got it open. What I just wasn't sure is when we file the affidavit, are we specifying the type of citizen, the type of national?
You're just calling yourself a national.
Okay.
And you could say United States of America national or American national. You know, that is recognized. But I would stay away from the U.S. National, I think.
Okay.
And I would stay with just the National.
I know Brad refers to it on the union call as a non-citizen national.
Those are American Samoans.
Yeah.
If you weren't born in Samoa, you're not one of them.
Okay. Well, he says that's the highest status.
Well,
yeah, because they can own their land, but because they were born there. It only applies to them. If you were born in American Samoa, you can use that. I do have one more quick comment on the non-proton ab initio. You can put non-proton ab initio from the divine spark. There's your beginning. And that's even before the 14th Amendment presumed you were a slave when your feet first touched the ground.
Mm-hmm. And this would also correspond with scripture where it says that God, he said he knew you before you were formed in the womb. And it was that first spark of life, which only God gives life. So.
Yep. I yield.
Okay. If you could give your first name, then we know who we're talking to. So,
may I? She did.
Thank you, Darryl.
You're welcome, Kent. Who is this?
Is Kent finished?
Yes, Kent's finished.
I yield.
Thank you. Rochelle from Idaho.
Okay.
I have two comments and a question. A first comment is, I also had the same questions Kent did, and thanks for partially answering them. I'm going to go back over them myself. The second comment is, I would like very much to continue with a vocabulary, like on this call, these specific terms that we're talking about. Those of us who feel we have it down and understand it, maybe send a definition to Phyllis or come up with a composite of what this means. And start keeping a list of the vocabulary. As a republic, we had that list about 3 years ago, but then when the organization changed over to the one we have here in Benoit County for the Idaho State, we lost all that vocabulary list. So that's my second comment. We need to start a vocabulary list. I think it'd be helpful to everyone. And my third question is, everything that Marilyn suggested is great, and what you're doing today is great, Darryl. And as far as our working on the other site in the mornings from 8 to 10, it's a wonderful education group when I have time for it. But to coordinate it on the Tuesday class, at least, because this is our Republic class, I would very much like to have people, and like we did when we almost had the 50 states, to just announce yourself and what state and status you're from. Some of us are still delegates. We haven't lost our delegation. And that way we'd know who's on the call, and if there's other people in different states, they say, well, let's connect with those people. So that was my suggestion and question, if we could start doing that, if it wasn't too much trouble for Phyllis, maybe somebody else could do that work and coordinate it, but an idea. Thank you.
Well, we do have in this here 71 pages, he does have a lot of the vocabulary, a lot of these here definitions or
good
glossary on issues regarding status, you know, with
yes,
allegiance, state citizen, federal citizen. There's just a lot of different areas that is covered in that, and it's pretty self-explained. You know, the difference between, like, non-resident, resident, and the differences of it.
I don't get my new computer the first of the month, so I'm behind the eight ball, but that's very, very good. As far as Roger goes, everything he has to do, and what we're doing here in the Republic, I feel is exceptionally compatible because he has an on-site remedy. And what we have is the deep, far going back to the first spark understanding of the overall process. So I think they're very compatible, the two ideologies. They, I think, blend well, and I yield.
Yeah, well, I think we're both heading in the same direction and on the same plane, so that is good. Was there another question?
I just have a quick question. This is Michaela again from Florida. Who's the author of that that manual? There's, it doesn't say anything. It just says it was updated in December of 2023.
Devin from Michigan.
Okay.
And he actually put it together for his wife because his wife didn't they were kind of newly wed. And, you know, she didn't understand it, so he put this together kind of for her to, you know, comprehend the difference and stuff. And so he offered it, you know, to the Radio Ranch and shared it with everybody freely. So what a blessing. It's a very good piece of work and research. And so does that help?
Yes. I wasn't sure if it came from Roger. I joined a little bit late, so I wasn't sure if it was some of Roger's work or not.
Yeah, well, Devin actually put it together, and, you know, he's been, you know, on Roger's call. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, was there another question? Okay. We can go through a little bit here on the difference on allegiance, and we'll touch on the difference on state and federal citizenship. Allegiance basically... here's allegiance as a noun from Merriam-Webster's is an obligation of a feudal vassal to his liege lord, and the one in, you know, that's claiming on the top of the pyramid. And B, the fidelity owned by a subject or citizen, owed to a subject or citizen to a sovereign or government. And this is where the lord of the manor is claiming authority over all these citizens, which owe allegiance, you know, to this here corporate United States. It's basically what they're defining here. And in Black's Law 4th, it defines allegiance as an obligation of fidelity and obedience to government in consideration for protection that government gives, where, you know, you give up certain rights in exchange for protection, you know, that the government would provide. And so, and then the tie of a or ligament which binds a subject or citizen to the king or government in return for that protection which the king or government affords the subject or citizen. It consists in a true and faithful obedience of the subject due to his sovereign. And this is Coke 4B, this is a case, and is a comparatively modern corruption of legiance, which is derived from liege, meaning absolute or unqualified. It signified originally league fealty, absolute or unqualified fealty. And he gives a little bit of an explanation down here underneath it. The terms of a citizen that owes allegiance to a government, they owe fidelity and obligation for consideration and the protection the government gives. This bears its roots in feudalism. And now... we'll call this a citizen subject. And that's how it's written in the 14th Amendment between citizens. Either you're a citizen, you could be a citizen and subject to basically to the lord of the manor. And then the second paragraph here, it says, so we know a state is an organized body of members who create a government with the purpose of exercising their will, allegiance. However, it is a relationship between a government and its subjects who owe an obligation of fidelity, true and faithful obedience. And this absolute it is, or this obedience is absolute. And a member of a state has starkly different obligations than that of a citizen subject. Members of a state operate common law habits and customs with a government's responsibilities being only that is expressly delegated to them. Now, these are two different types of relationships. What about our own laws and customs? Is there any reference to these types of citizenships in our own country? Evidence one expresses that there are two types of citizens, citizens of individual states and citizens of the federal government. Is this referenced anywhere else? Which it is. So we'll go on here, and this next page it talks about, here it is, I think. Let's see where I'm at here. Yeah. Article 4, Section 2, Clause 1, annotated. And it says the first section of Article 4, Section 2 provides that the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens of other states. The provision is often called Privileges and Immunities Clause, or the Comity Clause. This clause, which is textually tied to a state citizenship, should not be confused, which is a distinct provision in the 14th Amendment, the Privileges and Immunities Clause, which protects the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States against state invasion. And this is a little explanation that Devin put in. He said, Congress distinguishes between two types of citizens, citizens of each state and citizens of the United States. These are the political statuses which extend in the United States of America. You have citizens of individual states who have separate privileges and immunities from those of citizens of the United States. Now, here's the slaughterhouse cases really bring this out clearly. And the primary holding, the Privileges and Immunity Clause of the 14th Amendment is limited to federal citizenship rather than extending to state citizenship. Not only may a man be a citizen of the United States without being a citizen of a state, but an important element is necessary to convert the former into the latter. He must reside within the state to make him a citizen of it, but it is only necessary that he should be born or naturalized in the United States to be a citizen of the Union. It is quite clear, then, that there is a citizenship of the United States and a citizenship of a state, which are distinct from each other and which depend upon different characteristics and circumstances in the individual. This distinction, and this is his comment. Now, this distinction goes all the way back to 1872. A citizen of the United States is a federal citizen, or a citizen of the federal government in Washington, D.C. A state citizen, on the other hand, is a member of one of the states. Okay, has anybody got any questions on that?
Yes, Rochelle.
Yeah, go ahead, Rochelle.
Am I correct in saying then that being born in California, I am a citizen of the United States, but living on the land in Idaho, I am a citizen in Idaho State.
That's correct. You would be a citizen of Idaho because you were born on the land in Idaho.
No, I was born in California. That making me a citizen of the several United States.
Well, you would be considered a state citizen basically from, you know, your origins, your roots would be in California. And
correct.
You know, so now you moved to Idaho, so, you know, I guess you've got a dual capacity. Your birth certificated person is considered a citizen of the United States. You know, basically, they're holding you under the presumption because it is warehoused in the District of Columbia. So they're holding you as a capacity of part of that element, but yet, your state citizenship is basically that recognizes you as a national, as one of the people. And this is where the 9th and 10th Amendment basically lays it out, you know, very clearly, you know, that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by the states or to it by the states are respectively are reserved to the states respectfully or to the people. See, everything goes back to the people as the source. The people are the fountain of sovereignty. So, does that answer your question?
Then I'm correct, and I should not say I'm a citizen of the state of Idaho, but I may be an Idaho a citizen living in Idaho State. Using the word of is wrong. I would never be a citizen of the state of Idaho.
Well,
although
see,
I can be a citizen of the several United States, correct?
See, they've kind of changed the state of. You know, it was kind of different, you know, when it was originally done before they incorporated everything, you know, into this municipal corporation. I think
yes.
That it holds a different value, so to speak. But, you know, I would rather say a state citizen.
Of Idaho. No, just say living in Idaho. Because you want to say where you're living.
Yeah, you can say, you could say that.
I know you don't want to say you're residing or they give your address, but anyway, I thought it would be proper to say Idaho State when we address like at the General Assembly, we don't call ourselves the General Assembly of Idaho. We say the Idaho State General Assembly, not using the word of to confuse us with a U.S. citizen.
Comment.
Anyway, I yield.
Okay. Somebody have a comment or to hear?
This is Paul.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
Even though I used it in my affidavit, I can see from this discussion that there really doesn't have to be any clarification that you are claiming any sovereignty to any entity other than your creator. I mean, that's where your obligation lies. I said, I therefore declare myself to be a U.S. national of the USA, owing allegiance only to Minnesota State. I'm not a federal citizen under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the, all caps, United States. But I really didn't need to say that. All I needed to say was that I am not a 14th Amendment citizen. I didn't have to claim allegiance to any state. I only needed to declare my allegiance to God. And that's none of their business. See, I'm not asking their permission. I'm not offering a carrot for them. okay, well, I'm not a 14th Amendment citizen. I'm not a citizen of the United States, but I still have allegiance to one of the several states. That's almost like bartering.
Yeah, well, your true citizenship really goes back where it should be, in heaven, because, you know, this is where it talks in Scripture that we are actually citizens of heaven and that we are sojourners here on earth in this life. And, you know, we return back to the Father. And, you know, that's why it says to call no man father. And, you know, this is one thing, you know, where, you know, the, you know, Catholic Church was one of them, you know, where, you know, they called the Pope father and the priest father. And, you know, that is really contrary to Scripture.
Yes, it is.
So, just to point that out, was there another question?
Very good. The less is best. So, all right, thank you.
Is there any other questions? Okay. Let's just go through, read this last little paragraph on the conclusion. It says, there are two types of citizen. One who owes allegiance to, is subject to, and is a vassal to a government or sovereign. And one who is a member of a self-governing state that as a body is the final governing authority of a government limited to delegated powers and authority by members of a people. And this also brings in the division where, you know, you have a constitutional republic and then you have a legislative democracy under mob rule. And basically a national is, or a state citizen is basically one of the people that created this inferior legislative power. And just like the 11th Amendment, all those amendments were basically established by Congress. So they fall, you know, everything past the 10, you know, all fall into the limitation of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, where Congress shall have the exclusive authority over the district not exceeding 10 miles square. And then for only certain places, for dockyards, arsenals, and other needful buildings. And so it, you know, clearly limits, but here we've got a feudal system, which is basically a legislative democracy, and we have also a constitutional republic. And that's why in Article 4, Section 4, it says it very clearly that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. So, you know, we can live under either side, but as a sovereign, as a national, you have duties and responsibilities. And, you know, you're not looking for a king to provide you welfare. It says, you know, even in the preamble, it says that we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and to promote the general welfare. It didn't say to provide the welfare. And to secure the blessings of liberties to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So it's to promote it and to establish it. And, well, we'll read the rest of this here, and then we'll move on to the close. But this distinction made between, in both Black's Law Dictionary, which is legal, and Merriam-Webster Dictionary, which is your common language for today, common speak, there's a citizen and a subject and a citizen subject. A citizen subject is a vassal to the government sovereign and owing total faith and obedience But with a citizen, a member of a people state, that's what the Ninth and Tenth Amendment was bringing out. The roles are reversed, and the government is controlled and limited by the citizens of the state for their purposes. And this is the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. It's reserved to the people. And just like I read in those all those state constitutions, all political power is inherent in the people. And this is why it's so important to declare your correct status as a national, and that you are not one of their property under their presumption of law, under their color of law. So Congress acknowledges two distinct political classes in our nation, citizens of the states and citizens of the United States, going all the way back to 1872. So what are these two citizenships, and what type are they? Are they citizens or citizen subjects? It's also unlikely you've ever been asked if you're a state citizen. So let's start with what we know by figuring out what a U.S. citizen is. Now, when you have applications, whether it's a voter registration, whether it's a passport application, or any other type of application, normally the first two or three questions are you over the age of 18, which is basically the age of majority? Are you a United States citizen? Are you a resident? And this is the entrapment, and by our own admissions, we basically, you know, set ourselves up to basically confessing into a presumption that they're holding us into. And this is what we want to clarify, and that's why it is so important that we make this correction and establish our correct national status and get that recorded into the federal secretary of state, the one who has been authorized to issue passports, which determine status. And you can go ahead and apply for that passport card, which only costs you $30. And that can be actually used as your travel permit. As a national, you know, you have basically rights that are acknowledged and protected. So is there any questions on any of this yet?
Yeah, actually, I have a question about the document. So if you look at what you just read, the second to the last paragraph, Congress acknowledges two distinct political statuses, and then there's a number four in parentheses as if there's a footnote.
Yeah.
And then at the end, 1872 has a number five. Those don't seem to be part of the document. Are those intended to be footnotes?
Okay. Now, just go back to the page before.
Okay.
And you'll see a number four. And a number five. Number five is the slaughterhouse cases of 1872.
Thank you.
And number four is Article 4, Section 2, Clause 1, annotated.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other questions?
Darryl, this is Kent.
Yes, Kent.
Could I rightfully conclude then that what Dale was bringing up on this call a week ago or 2 weeks ago regarding the position he was taking, does that correspond with what you're saying about your true citizenship is in heaven?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, because the created can never be greater than the creator, and we didn't start out with dead matter, you know. And you know, for anybody that don't believe in a creator, the one that created the heavens and the earth, you know, the Bible also talks about it in Psalms 14 and Psalms 53. It says a fool says in his heart that there is no God. And so they would fall under that identity. you know, if you don't acknowledge that there's a supreme authority. But, you know, I remember when I was in grade school, my science teacher taught evolution. And when he got up in front of the class and he said, "Now, you don't have to believe this here," but he said, "I am required to teach it." And then he went on to, you know, talk about evolution. But, you know, but this is what is pushed in the schools. That's indoctrination when you teach one side. But when you teach both sides, that's education. And the truth will always prevail in education. And I know Lloyd Dale up there in South Dakota, you know, he was awarded Teacher of the Year 2 years in a row. And then, but he would not teach evolution without teaching creation alongside. And he was let go, and he was not able to get another teaching job in South Dakota after that. So, but this goes back to that feudal system where they're trying to indoctrinate the people to be subjects. And that's why they never taught us about the importance of basically having the correct political status. And this is why it's so important that we understand this political status and we make our claim in the record of our correct status, that we are not subject to these tyrants that have found their place way into a place of authority. And it is basically the bar guild and stuff that is using it to enforce statutes, codes, rules, and regulations against what they claim to own, which is the citizen subject as property. Getting this here status corrected is very important, and I would encourage everyone to comprehend this, to read this information that is below, and get this here into the record. Just add a cover letter. There's a sample of the affidavit of citizenship status attached on the bottom with the address and everything that you could use. It's in a Word form, and so you can fit it to apply to you, and then just add a cover letter to it and get it mailed off, and then I would make, you know, two or three or four originals that you have extra originals. One would go to the secretary or to the attorney general of the state where you're located. And then you want an original to send in with your passport card. And then you want an original to keep for yourself to take down to the county recorder and make a certified copy out of it. And then you have the one original that goes to the federal secretary of state. So is there anybody else with a question?
Thank you, Darrell. I wanted to say one other thing. Thank you for conducting an orderly call tonight. I think it was very informative and well done. And I appreciate that when somebody asked a question, such as myself or others, that other people also participated in answering that question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thank you guys all for coming to the call and trying to work together to restore this country back to its original intent and to restore this bottom-up authority, which is to the people. But, you know, rights also come with duties. So we have to exercise our right to say that, you know, we don't want this, you know, garbage being taught in our schools. We don't want this kind of garbage, you know, pushed in our community. It is the people that decide what happens. And there's no man or woman has authority over another man or woman. But we are not to trespass either. And this is where the law of love is applied. So is there any other last questions or
Yeah, this is Brad. Can I have a minute?
Yes, go ahead, Brad.
Yes, sir. Boy, do I miss these Tuesday night calls, listening to all these intelligent conversations. First and foremost, I'd like to say that Bill and myself, we have had conversation with some admirals who are now aware that this republic is that we're all here and we're ready to come forward, and we have almost all 50 states brought forward. So for those of you that are still delegates and members of a general assembly in your state, we are going to be exposed to the military shortly. How quickly, I'm not sure. But it might be something that you'd be interested in getting your general assemblies put back together and functional, so that when we do bring it before these gentlemen, that we can have a legitimate conversation about what we're here trying to get accomplished. They are reading Bill's book, They Be Pirates, and they're extremely interested in hearing from us. Second of all, it was mentioned earlier that I have said that as far as status is concerned, that I use non-citizen national, which is true. I have no way to confirm or deny what the gentleman said about American Samoa. I don't believe that way. That's my own personal opinion, and I don't try to push my opinion on anyone else. Anyone can believe as they wish. But I do see that on the document, the DS-82, the replacement for our passports, the only two options would be citizen or non-citizen national. So I've crossed out citizen. My application has been in for quite some time, and I should be expecting something soon. So I'll be able to come on and explain to everybody how that turned out, whether it's something that anybody wishes to duplicate what I've done or not, so that at least we have information in one direction, whether it's good or bad. We have information, which is always good. So I appreciate the time to chat, and God bless everybody. And like I said, just try to spend a little bit of time putting your general assemblies back together, because at some point in the very near future, we're going to be meeting with the military, primarily starting with two admirals. Thank you.
May I?
Thank you. Yeah, who's this?
And this is Rochelle, and I wanted to ask Brad a question, if I may.
Well, go ahead. Make it quick. We need to close.
Yes. Brad, I was understanding that Bill of the Fourth Branch is going to have a second teaching session this coming Wednesday on the 21st with your group in Massachusetts. Is that still ongoing?
The union call is a national call. In fact, we even have people that are international people.
Okay.
We have a lot of chickens that don't want to have their numbers pop up on the screen as being on the call. So they're listening in behind others. So,
well, Bill has such interesting background and is also well informed, like on all the presumptions and various things, almost to the point where you don't know what to do. He's so in depth, but he teaches so well. Is he having another class this coming Wednesday, like we suggested?
Yes, we're going to have a class tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we're going to be discussing UCC. And we're going to UCC and Silver Bond and how that applies. That's going to be top topic for tomorrow night.
Oh, good. I will give that number to Phyllis. Thank you very much, Brad, for all you do, too. Thank you.
Okay. If there's anybody that knows anybody from Louisiana, Mississippi, or West Virginia, if you could pass along this information, like tonight's notice, to them, and encourage them to get involved, as we would like to get those three states basically brought in, and then we can, once again, we can meet with the Committee of States and establish our Continental Congress on the de jure side, and then we will have basically this here, basically our Republican form of self-governance established, completed, and noticed to the world. And then we can start, you know, executing, you know, our authority. And once we get, I encourage everybody to get their national status established. You know, when we basically operate in a common law court, you know, it's good to have, you know, that your correct status acknowledged by the system, and that is in power today. They're holding us under a presumption, and what you want is to establish a fact, and an unrebutted affidavit stands as fact. And so that is why it's so important to do it by affidavit. So, well, with that,
Carol, yes. I want to throw something in here real quick. This is Paul.
Go ahead.
Under the Certificate of Non-Citizen Nationality on travel.state.gov, Section 308 of the INA confers U.S. nationality but not U.S. citizenship on persons born in an outlying possession of the United States or born of a parent or parents who are non-citizen nationals who meet certain physical presence of residence requirements. The term outlying possessions of the United States is defined in Section 101A29 of the INA as American Samoa and Swains Island. No other statutes define any other territories or any of the states as outlying possessions.
Well, thank you for that, Paul. And I would encourage you, Brad, to read that 71 pages because all this stuff is in there. And the link.
That's fine. We'll read it. And at this particular moment, that's how my application went in. I will read that. And thank you. I wasn't disputing you. Like I said, I'd had no way to verify or deny it. But my application has been turned in with citizen crossed out and non-citizen national as my my required status change. So, like I said, that will be coming back to me shortly. I will have an answer for everybody so that if it's not the proper way to do it, we can spare others from having to jump, you know, put all their application out and wait for it to come back and all that. We can narrow it down better. And but that's how it's been done. I there's nothing I can do about it at the moment.
And what application was that? Passport application?
It's a DS-82.
DS-82. So it's a passport renewal.
Passport renewal, yeah. And if you look underneath where the picture gets stapled on, there's a blue line. And right in there in small writing, it says that your application was turned in as a citizen or a non-citizen national. As it was explained to me quite a while ago, non-citizen national is the highest possible status. It's not necessary for me to explain who said that. I'm pretty sure everybody here knows where that came from, but I don't think you knew the woman that taught that to us, but that's how it was done, and that's how I'll get my response to return back to me. So hopefully it'll come back in a manner either with some kind of an explanation as why it needs to be changed, or it's going to be accepted that way, and then I'll have to deal with it, whatever comes back.
As long as it comes back with a code of 9. If it comes back with a code of 09, then that means you're a national. So,
okay.
And that's why it's so important to attach this affidavit of citizenship evidence along with your along with your application for the passport card when you submit it. So that way, that way there's no doubts.
Right. There was, I know, probably 35 or 40 pages that went along in with the application with my name change. And I also understand that a lot of you haven't been so lucky as myself, where the judge just granted me the name change. It took the clerk's office four attempts to get it done the right way, but the judge had no problem signing it each and every time. So I know for some of you that it hasn't gone quite so well. So, but hopefully we figure it out as a team. We get it right. We all get it done. And like I said, we do have two admirals that are very interested. Bill and I and Marilyn are going to go meet them, and we're going to bring the information, and we'll arrange when the time is right for them to come on a call or an actual physical meeting or whatever. But that's in the works. So,
Brad, how did court go yesterday? Or is it tomorrow? Last Wednesday.
We need to.
Lynn, they never called me back. This really isn't the right call to. If you're interested, you can just call me. Call me, and I'll walk you through what happened. But they're not interested in having a conversation.
I think what is important that we establish our correct status. And I don't know that we're really changing our names or anything like that. We're actually correcting our political status as recognized within the system. And I think this is, when we establish that with that passport office and with the Federal Secretary of State, that makes it of record. And I think that's really an important part. So if there's anybody new on the call that does not receive the notices for the Tuesday or Thursday night calls and would like to receive them, you can send Phyllis an email. She'll give her email out here in a little bit. She'll want your first name, your state, who invited you to the call, and a phone number. We do not share any of your contact information, but if somebody would want to reach out to you, that they can, they will send Phyllis an email requesting to contact you, and she will pass that along to you, and then it'll be up to you to reach out at your own convenience to communicate with them. So, Phyllis, do you want to give out your email?
Yes. It is blueridge21@gmail.com. blueridge1121@gmail.com. And again, just as a reminder, if anybody has any comments about changing the time on our call to 8 instead of 9, I would appreciate hearing from you about it.
Okay, and that will be for, we will stay with the same time here this Thursday. And then we'll see, if there's any objections or many objections. And if there's not many objections to it, then we will be probably starting an hour earlier next week. So it will be 8:30 Eastern time rather than 9 o'clock Eastern. So
30 minutes.
Well,
half hour early.
It'll be just a half hour earlier. And that way, like tonight, it went almost – We went almost 2 hours ready, and it gets pretty long for those on the East Coast. So,
yeah. Daryl, if I could just for a moment,
yes.
Open invitation. This is Paul from Radio Ranch. Go to exposethematrix.com and find the free conference call link down there. You can join the Radio Ranch conference, which has somebody in it pretty much from 7 a.m. to midnight Eastern, if not later. The name of the conference is PPN Radio Ranch. The links are all on Exposed to Matrix. Brad, I would particularly like to talk to you after the program about the whole name change thing. So that's it. ExposeTheMatrix.com. Grab the FCC links on that page right underneath the smiling picture of Roger Sales. Thank you, Daryl.
Okay, and would encourage everyone to participate in those calls during the week. You know, they're Monday to Friday. Monday they kind of talk about the health of the iTeraCare for the first hour, and a lot of times if you've got a comment or if you're new in the call, Roger always asks out if there's anybody new, you know, and get into a little introduction or conversation regarding, you know, some of these topics that affect each one of us. So this is good learning experience for everyone. And where iron sharpens iron, we continue to exchange our thoughts and ideas. There's only one truth, and our Creator is the source of the absolute. So that's where we want, that's where we find freedom, is we find freedom, you know, in truth. It is the truth that shall set us free. So with that, is there anyone that would like to close in a word of prayer? If not, then I will. Heavenly Father, we come before you to thank you, Lord, for each and every one on this call this evening. We just thank you, Lord, for the information that's been provided to us to help us to be separate and to come ye out of her, my people, and to be obedient to your word, Lord. And we ask you, Lord, for your wisdom as we move to restore this great nation back to being recognized as one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. And we just pray that you'll continue to help us to work together in harmony one with another, that we can once again be an example to the children and for those in other parts of the world, that we recognize you and we revere you as our authority. As we know, Lord, that we have went in the wrong direction in many ways, in what is being taught in the schools and enforced through this here governmental system. We just pray, Lord, that you'll give us the wisdom and just lay it upon the conscience of all those that you have called for this task to apply the authority that is from you to restore this land back to being recognized under your principles. And we just commit all things into your hands, Lord, and ask that you continue to deliver us from the force of darkness and prepare the way before us in the name of Yeshua. Amen.
Daryl, Sal from Colorado.
Yeah, go ahead, Sal.
You were going to get me some documents from a court case so I can look up those two cases.
Do you have PACER?
PACER? No.
Yes. You know, I've been looking for it, Sal, and I can't find that specific document. I've got boxes here. Now you gotta take into consideration. They sent me to the space program for 3 years, and you know, and then I got into driving truck all over the country, and I moved down to Texas and moved back up here, and I've got boxes of stuff that haven't been up unopened for a while, but. I was looking for that document because there's a half, two-thirds of a page, but it is in a case that I brought against Production Credit Association, and I've looked through this here, but I've been looking for it, and as soon as I find it, I will get it to you.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I didn't know.
Okay.
Have a good night. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks, all, and we'll say good night, all, and we'll... look forward to seeing you on Thursday, if not Thursday, Friday morning on the prayer call, or next Tuesday. And next week, we'll more than likely be starting a half an hour sooner. So with that, we'll say farewell.